Welcome to this episode of Bioethics for the People, the most popular podcast on the planet, according to Grandma Nancy. I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Tyler Gibb, who, if he weren't here recording right now, would probably be golfing.
And I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Devin Stahl, who dutifully completes the same 5 New York Times puzzles every day. All right. Good morning, Devin.
Good morning, Tyler.
We've got another great guest talking about AI and healthcare. But before that, I've been plotting maybe some of my spring travel to conferences and such. And it got me thinking about what my favorite city for a conference location is. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you, do you have a favorite location?
So one of the conferences I go to pretty frequently every third year or so meets in San Diego. And that is a fun location.
Oh, that's good. Because San Diego is my answer too.
Oh, look at us.
Yeah, I love San Diego.
San Diego is also my answer.
Is it really? Awesome.
Good. Well, birds of a feather.
I've had great conference experiences in a lot of cities. But every time I see one that's in San Diego, it's because everything's walkable. The food is great. The weather's always great. Mm-hmm. Yes. Interesting. 3 for 3 for San Diego.
Okay, so we have a phantom voice over here, Dr. Benjamin Collins. Welcome. Tell us what you like about San Diego.
Yeah. Well, the weather is definitely a big plus, but really just getting around, walking around, being near the sea. Most of the time I'm in places where there's not a lot of outdoor activity. Mm-hmm. Once I was around and there was like an orchestra playing outside, and I was just walking by.
Yeah. Culture, weather. I mean, probably we all kind of like San Diego for the same reasons. I didn't hear anything like very weird coming out of any of our mouths. The weather's great. There's lots to do. You can walk around. These are great things about a conference.
There's great food all over the place. Mm-hmm. Really easy to go golfing while you're there.
Okay, that wouldn't have been on my list, but okay. Good for you. All right. So, Tyler, Ben, great to see you. So, Dr. Benjamin Collins, welcome to Bioethics for the People. For our listeners, Dr. Benjamin Collins is a postdoctoral fellow in ethics, legal, and social issues of artificial intelligence in healthcare, working in the biomedical informatics and biomedical ethics departments at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. He's also a graduate of Temple University Hospital Internal Medicine Residency Program and practices as a hospitalist. So you're one of those people who's like both MD, but also does all this really cool research in AI. So you're the perfect person to explain AI to us because, you know, we're just dabbling. But you also, so you do this work and you do it thinking with equity and bias. And so we're really excited to have you here. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad to be on.
So tell us a little bit about this postdoc and what you've been doing research on in the realm of artificial intelligence.
Yeah, so I've been here in the last 2 years working with great mentors and really thinking about the ethical issues that come up when AI is used in healthcare. And from a couple of different perspectives. So as a clinician, I think a lot about how it would affect clinical reasoning, but also it's really important to think about what patients would think when AI is being used and the issues that come up in terms of when AI is being developed, decisions on implementing AI systems. There's really a lot of things to consider.
So when we think about clinical reasoning, I think this is something when students are going through their medical training, medical education, that this gets hammered into them. Like, how do you think like a doctor? Like the differential diagnosis process and trying to kind of take all of this disparate information or data and to coalesce it into some sort of diagnosis, right? How was your experience in learning that? And then how do you think that AI might have been or might in the future be helpful in trying to figure out clinical reasoning from a clinician's perspective?
Yes, that's a great question. And I'm not too far removed yet from residency, but even when I was going through medical school and then through residency, I was not anticipating that I would be thinking a lot about AI a few years later. So everything that I did in terms of training and clinical reasoning, I did without thinking that I would be potentially using or thinking about AI systems. There's still a lot of comparisons to technology progress in other areas. So one of the big ones is the electronic health record. And when that was initially implemented, how did that change the way that clinicians thought? And there were a lot of big changes then in terms of how clinicians interacted with patients and their thought processes. Now, moving towards AI, we're taking away some of the burden on clinicians to memorize a lot of content, and the questions become more along the lines of what do we do with the information that we know, and how do we apply that information?
Yeah. So I guess backing up a little bit, when was the first time, because all of us didn't, grow up and our training wasn't during the time that AI was really being used in the classroom or in the training setting. When was the first time that you came across it, and what were your thoughts about, oh boy, this is going to be an important part of my career, research?
Yeah, so one thing that actually we didn't cover in the in my introduction was that I completed a clinical informatics fellowship. So after I completed residency at Temple, I went to Oregon Health and Science University for a clinical informatics fellowship. And during that time, I was presented with an opportunity to do some research on AI with one of the clinicians there. And that was really the first time that I thought about how AI was being used in medicine. And even though AI is now thought a lot about in from a clinical informatics perspective, it was not really at that time. This is right before the generative AI and all of that became a big thing. And it was not something that I was thinking about at that time.
I don't know if you'd say luck. I don't know if we're, I want to get your opinions on whether this is all a good thing or a bad thing, but what a time to be. You're in this program for informatics, and then all of a sudden AI just totally blows up. And it's like, all right, Benjamin, now's your time to shine. You have all the tools you need to be a leading researcher in this space, thinking about clinical reasoning and clinical application and AI and informatics. You were just like at this like sweet spot where you were capable. You had the tools necessary to really think deeply about something that's really new, and the rest of us are just trying to figure out what even the heck AI is.
Yeah, so it was very fortunate. And I would say I've always been somewhat of a computer person. And actually, aside from the fact that I had always really wanted to go into medicine, my parents thought that I might go into something more computer related. Then, as I went into residency, actually, even going into the clinical informatics was fortunate as well. It was not on my radar at all when I went into residency. I was talking with a medical student one time, and we were talking about the use of Raspberry Pi systems in medicine and how that might be an application. And then I went and ran to the residency program director, like, hey, I'm interested in these things. And the residency program director then pointed me towards clinical informatics. So I've really been fortunate to be in the right places in the right time.
Okay. What's a Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, I was just gonna ask the same thing.
Good. Yes. So essentially, it's an open source programming. You can use the technology to create different systems. Often, like you'll see, like very small computer chips that are then attached to different devices, and then you can program those devices to do different things that you want them to do.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So let's circle back to what we talked about just a few minutes ago about clinical reasoning. And tell us about your work in that space, and also bias and algorithms and kind of all of those questions that you are working on.
Yeah, it's really a large space to work in, and there's a lot of people who are really starting to get involved in terms of like how AI systems change the way that clinicians think. Now, in terms of what I am doing is really looking at the potential for biases to show up in that reasoning process. And there's a lot in terms of what the clinician subconsciously thinks, we call them, so automation biases. So as you, and this is not restricted simply to AI, but in any sort of automated process, you may come to a conclusion without actually thinking through the process of whether that's the right conclusion or not. And this is also like a big thing in terms of like electronic health records. So you get an alert that comes up and you get it like 100 times a day or whatever. And it tells you certain information. And you have to click yes or no that you acknowledge that information. But once you see it so many times, you're not really going to pay attention to what it says. And similarly to AI systems, when you see the information presented to you, you may be less likely to think about where that information came from based on it being from an AI system. And that can go either way in terms of you agreeing with the AI or disagreeing with the AI, depending on underlying biases in terms of like technology. Like you may say, I don't really like this advanced technology stuff, and then have a tendency to disagree more often with the AI system. Or maybe you're have a lot of interest in it and you may have more of a tendency to agree with the AI system.
So it's the idea of coming into it with kind of a skeptical mind frame versus a kind of an accepting mind frame. I see myself doing that too. I think that every haiku poem ever written by ChatGPT is brilliant. And I think it's like revolutionary. So that's my bias.
So disappointing every time you say it. So this is already happening, right? So physicians are already seeing information presented to them that has been AI generated. And is your research looking at kind of how they automatically will process that information and try to use it or not use it? And are you seeing trends? Is it like the old physicians are like, no, thank you, and the new ones are like, yes, or is it more complicated than that?
It can be more complicated than that.
Of course.
Yes. Yeah. So there has been research showing that there's more reliance on AI technology by those who have less experience. So whether that's, or really I should say less expertise, because you can also get into AI systems that are aligned with clinical specialty, and even an experienced clinician who doesn't have as much experience in that specialty will then rely on that AI system more as well. Really, there's a lot to do for what clinicians are going to, how they're going to approach the use of AI systems. So we just went through some of the subconscious issues that come up. There are also conscious thought processes in terms of how clinicians use AI systems. And part of that is first, whether they're aware that they are using an AI system or not. Not all AI systems are presented in a way that someone who is using it recognizes that it's an AI system. And then once the user recognizes it's an AI system, then the question becomes, what do they think of an AI system? So do they think of it as having its own agency in terms of like, this is something that the AI system is telling me and I should listen to it the way that I might listen to another person? Now, then at that point, like once you start to give AI systems like this perception of agency, then the question becomes like, how much? If you receive information that you disagree with, then what's the next step? Do you have to consult with another human clinician, or do you just have the ability to just say, no, I'm not going to listen to it?
Yeah. So what are some examples of AI systems or processes that are used commonly that healthcare providers might not be aware that they're AI influenced?
Yeah. So I don't know of any specific examples, but many AI systems may be incorporated into the electronic health record system. Mm-hmm. So if it's incorporated into the EHR or electronic health record system, then you may not know that it's there unless someone tells you that it's there, because it may be presented, like it may present to you information without saying that it's from the AI system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we've been talking a little bit about the ways that patients are wanting or not wanting to know that information was gleaned from AI. But now you're saying that not even physicians are always aware that the information that they're getting is from AI. And that presents, and so how could they possibly then relay that to a patient if they themselves didn't know? So it's adding an extra layer of obscuring kind of where information is coming from. If our goal is transparency, which a lot of people think it should be, these are multiple challenges to being transparent about the use of AI in our healthcare system.
Yes, I think there's definitely, it would be helpful for transparency all around in terms of first, the team that develops the AI system providing the information about the system they developed to the hospital or healthcare system that's adapting that system, then the administration of that healthcare system then providing that information to their clinicians and nurses and anyone else who may be using those systems, and then the clinicians and nurses providing information to the patients.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a suggestion. Remember how Microsoft Word used to have Clippy, and Clippy would like pop up and be like, hey, I have some suggestions about how to make your paper better. What if we had like an AI mascot who did the same, like he or she popped up and was like, hey, I'm AI. As I'm saying this, think of what the, you know, thing is. Like, what does this person look like? And then everybody knows because it's, you know, an animated thing with a name. And we go, oh, that's AI. He's here to help me.
That's very interesting. And I think the big thing there is like, so I mentioned the AI systems being incorporated into the electronic health record system. Now, if there's one EHR that's being used and all of the AI is developed for that EHR, I think it would probably not be very difficult to have something like that. Now, if you have, and the reality is that we always have all these third-party systems that are being developed, and they're not all going to be incorporated into the EHR. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you'll run into some barriers.
Okay. So not the easiest idea to implement. No. But still, what I heard you saying is that's still a brilliant idea. It's just going to be really hard to implement. Okay. I'll take it.
It definitely should be the image, the icon, the avatar should definitely be a Pokemon, though.
A Pokemon?
Yeah.
Okay.
It should probably be Eevee popping up every time. So.
No bad ideas in a brainstorm. Yep.
Yeah, I would probably go with a different Pokemon, but I think a Pokemon would be interesting.
Well, that's fair because I actually only know the name of three Pokemons, and one of them is Eevee because one of my favorite students' nickname was Eevee. That's the old, and Pikachu, and there's a big lizard too. That's all I know.
Keep it in the pod. I love this convo. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so there's this issue of transparency and how these things are being integrated. What other kinds of things are like on your mind, Benjamin, as you think about like how we're using AI and how we should be thinking about it?
Yeah, one of the ways that I like to think about AI and many of the ethical issues that come up from the use of AI is through an AI lifecycle framework. So essentially, thinking about the ethical issues as they arise across the lifecycle from the conceptualization of an AI system through data collection, AI development and training, validation, implementation, application at the point of care, and widespread use of the system and how it impacts society more broadly. And I think about it in this way because the issues that come up are going to be different at each of these steps. And the people involved, the questions that come up are all going to be different across these stages.
Mm-hmm. Does calling it a life cycle make AI seem more like a person?
It's actually a very good question. So it's not really something that I have thought about in that context. I have tended to think about life cycles from a technological perspective of something's being developed. Now it's being used. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's the biology life cycle. that makes sense. And one of the things that I've actually been thinking about a lot is the anthropomorphization of AI systems, because going back to the idea of AI systems with agency, if we think about them more like humans, then we're probably giving them more agency when we think about them that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe we're projecting too much human characteristics onto this technology. I think that's tough to do because it speaks to us in English in a voice it's easy to project human characteristics, I think. So in the life cycle of AI, are there times in the life cycle, phases, eras, where there are kind of more sticky ethical issues, or are the ethical concerns kind of throughout the entire life cycle?
Yeah, I would say they're throughout the entire life cycle. Now there's areas that get more attention. So one of those areas is in terms of data. So one of the biggest issues that gets attention in AI use in healthcare is whether the AI system is biased. And a lot of that bias tends to be traced back to the data that's incorporated into the system. So biased data will result into biased AI system. And really, all of our data is biased in some manner, just how much and in what way. But there's other areas that don't get as much attention, at least that I have seen. One of those is in terms of what issues come up as the AI system is actually being used at the point of care. So that may be accessibility to an AI system. A lot of these systems are going to first be implemented in large academic medical centers, and not everybody gets their care at large academic medical centers. Or you may have, even for like patient-facing systems that may be available online, you're going to have people who don't use those technologies to access those systems, and there's not really going to be an alternative. Like there's not a non-technology way to access AI systems.
So the distribution of access is really going to be inconsistent based upon technological access. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and then in terms of other areas is the prioritization of an AI system for population versus an individual. AI generally requires a lot of data, and that data is going to be spread across a large number of people. But a clinician is generally going to use an AI system for an individual patient encounter, and we don't know always whether that AI system is best for that individual patient. And there's a lot of questions in terms of how to use systems, how to determine when to not use them. And so relies on like how much are we trusting the AI systems. There are a couple of different ways that we go about placing trust in AI systems. So that can be AI systems that provide explanations. So AIs tend to be black boxes, but if they provide explanations, maybe we'll trust them more. The issue there is that we don't necessarily know if the explanation is correct or not, but the explanation might still help us feel trust. And then the other thing is in terms of an AI system saying how it thinks its prediction is. Most AI systems right now are just providing an output. So it might be like a binary output, yes or no, or it might be a sentence or something like that, but it's not telling us information about its output, where it could say, like, provide an answer to a question and say 70% certain about the accuracy of the output. Mm-hmm. And that information would help us know how much we should trust that output.
That's really interesting, Vic. And I think that you've just highlighted something that I haven't thought about as far as interfacing with AI or, you know, predictive language models, is that when I'm speaking and generating my own ideas and my own thoughts, even though I present them as maybe like 99% confidence rate of like how confident I am in the information I'm providing, in the back of my mind, I'm always aware that whether I'm like completely making stuff up, like I've got 2% confidence, or whether I'm like, you know, 50-50 or 75-25. But when I read something on a screen, like a Google search or a ChatGPT output, like I don't have that sense of, like you said, confidence, like a variation in the confidence of what's coming out. I just tend to take everything at face value, which is terrible. It's a terrible way of interfacing, I'm realizing now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think most people tend to go about the same way. So I definitely recognize where, like in a Google search, like I will rely or like what comes up first. Like, unless I very much am not finding what I'm looking for, then I might go down another pathway or search further. But if the first thing that comes up looks like it might be what I'm looking for, I'm probably just going to accept what it says.
In some ways, evidence-based medicine is all about trying to pull big numbers and then apply them to a person. But the person is an N of one, and we're doing this on a giant population. So this is not AI specific, this idea that we're trying to glean evidence from a general population and apply it to a person, which is never a perfect science. To me, the difference here is, whereas it maybe once was just a number that it gave you, now large language models are saying it to you in a way that sounds like a human, and it gets a little bit more confusing about how I use that. Is there more to AI than just giving a human voice to big data? Like, what else is it doing that makes it a little bit more complicated than that?
It's an interesting question. Other underlying questions from the opposite side is, what is AI doing that's different from other computer systems that are non-AI? And this is really on an along a spectrum of, what are we being presented with that makes us think differently about AI? And some of that goes back to the idea of the black box, in terms of, like, we don't know why the AI said what it said. So, and that's really pretty similar to like another human. You can obviously ask someone else to provide an explanation, but at the same time, there's going to be a level of trust in terms of whether that explanation is accurate. And B, the other person might not actually know why they said what they said. On the other hand, computer systems that are not AI, you can generally look at the programming and it will tell you why the computer said what it said. And it's going to be a lot more objective in terms of being able to understand why it said what it said than other ways where, like, among humans, among AI systems, there's going to be some level of subjectivity in terms of the user or the person talking to the other entity in terms of understanding why there was a certain output.
That makes AI sound scary to me, but my guess is you don't think AI is all that scary since you're working so much in this field. So, or maybe you do. So tell me, should we be scared?
Well, I am definitely very interested in AI. I won't say like, we're not headed towards like a singularity or something like that anytime soon. But there's definitely a lot to be concerned about, particularly in ways that we use AI systems, how we rely on them. And one of the important things to consider is that AI systems are not inherently neutral. And without an intentional effort to improve equity, there's a tendency to codify or amplify existing bias. So if we just go out and we use AI systems without thinking about that, we're going to add to inequities. And that's definitely something to be concerned about.
When you meet a new patient and maybe they've Googled you or looked into your CV or something prior to their interaction with you, and they say, "Doc, I read that you are interested in AI and it's really exciting. Like, what are you most excited about for AI in healthcare?"
Yeah, so I would say that I'm most excited about relieving some of the burden of having to memorize a lot of content. I know I mentioned that briefly early on, and I am a person who really likes to think in depth about issues, and whether that's the clinical problems or other issues as well, but that's just how I operate, and AI systems can facilitate that. A lot of that can be through, so there are AI systems for facilitating documentation of clinical encounters, for searching through information in the electronic health record to find data that's relevant to clinical encounters. And those are what I'm personally most interested in being able to use.
Tyler and I both had to take oral exams as part of our PhD. And so memorizing like huge swaths of information is also something that I think was that. And the explanation we got, which there's something to it, is that sometimes you just have to know information at hand, right? You don't want to have to always be looking something up every time you need to have information. It like slows down the process and it makes you look like you don't know what you're doing. So maybe AI is the solution to that in some respects. Like, I still think you need to know information. I don't think you're trying to argue physicians don't need to know anything anymore. They could just use AI. But there is like kind of rote memorization that might just not be really how the physician needs to be spending their brain power. And we could offload some of that to AI. Having to remember the clinical encounter so you can put it in the EHR is a really good example. It's like, what if I have six patients in a row? I just didn't have time to get to the computer. All right, so that makes total sense to me. Some people aren't great at it, and it just is hard to do for most people. So that's one area that AI can be helpful to us.
Yeah, no, certainly there's a baseline level of knowledge that any clinician would need to have, but there's often a lot of things that clinicians encounter that they've never encountered before. And those are things like maybe it's 10 years after they finished residency and they simply haven't seen it since then or never saw it at all. And the AI system can say, hey, have you considered X, Y, or Z? And the clinician go, oh yeah, I remember reading about that way back when, but I haven't seen it. And it didn't occur to me to think about it because it was not on my mind since I've never seen it. And I think those are situations where it can prompt useful ideas.
And so Evie pops out and says, hey, have you thought maybe it's rotavirus? And then you go, huh, yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah. I've also seen it modeled or used where, like, based upon the particular clinical presentation or the lab values or whatever, it'll pop up and say, hey, you know, consider this, or it's time for this type of follow-up, you know, treatments or something like that to help kind of plans of care. Because keeping track of all that stuff, in your head is impossible as a clinician when you're seeing dozens and dozens of patients a week. So I can see it being very helpful in that regard, but also utilizing big data sets in order to make predictions about individual patients. That would be amazing. But like we've talked about for the last, you know, several episodes, that it's big concerns about the privacy aspect, how the data is being collected, manipulated, and then regurgitated in some way. But then also the concerns about who's benefiting, who's profiting from this, I think are also real concerns.
Yeah, and just to touch on the privacy aspect, so that's one of the other issues in terms of, so I mentioned the priorities of the AI versus for the individual versus the population. Now, when I'm using an AI system for an individual, I might need to put their data into the AI system, which would then update the AI system for the population as a whole as that happens. But one of the things to consider is that for the individual patient, there's obviously risk their privacy. And for individuals who are from minority populations, there's a greater risk to their privacy. But at the same time, there's a greater need for their data to make sure that the AI system can work effectively for people from their group.
This is all super interesting. But Benjamin, is there anything else that we should be like excited for or wary of as we think about kind of the future, since you're in this space? Any final thoughts on where to leave our listeners to sort of things to watch out for?
Yeah. So one of the things that I have been thinking about recently as well is I mentioned earlier that there's not as much thought about the ethical issues of AI at the point of application. When those issues do come up, how are they going to be addressed? And say, for instance, that there's a clinical ethics consultation, and I've yet to encounter any documented instances of ethics consultations related to the issues from AI. But in talking with other researchers, clinicians, ethicists, I suspect that consultations are going to begin to pop up related to AI ethics if they haven't already. And recently, the paper accepted along with the clinical ethics consultation service director here, as well as one of the medical students here. We thought about hypothetical situations where there may be a consultation and how one might actually work through those consultations. And there's really, how much does the clinician and the ethicist, how much do they need to know about AI and being able to put together the puzzle pieces in order to understand the situation and provide a useful recommendation on how to approach those issues.
It would be great if any of our listeners have had an ethics consultation related to AI. Please get in contact with us, because that's a super interesting idea. And it puts as much onus on the clinical ethicist to figure out AI as it does the clinicians. I'm sure this is going to happen, is that AI comes up in an ethics consultation and we have to know enough, but it's another whole field to have to learn about so that we can be effective in the work that we're doing.
Yeah. We've written a paper and it's accepted. So the Journal of Clinical Ethics just accepted the paper. It'll be coming out in the summer issue.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye for it. Well, thank you, Benjamin. Appreciate your expertise, your work in this area, and also coming on and explaining it to us.
Yes, no, thank you for inviting me. Definitely enjoyed this conversation.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Bioethics for the People. We can't do it alone, so a huge shout out to Christopher Wright for creating our theme music and to Darian Golden Stahl for designing our logo and all of the artwork. If you're into what we're doing, give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen. And if you're really into what we're doing, head over to bioethicsforthepeople.com to snag some merch.